Hello, and welcome to another episode of Boundless Body Radio. I'm your host, Casey Ruff, and today we have another amazing guest to reintroduce to you now. Jen Winkler is a returning guest on our show. Check out her first appearance in episode 299 of Boundless Body Radio. Jen Winkler is a National Board Certified Health and Wellness Coach and Functional Blood Chemistry Specialist based out of Phoenix, Arizona. Jen is also a trained fertility instructor for natural family planning using the Symptothermal Method. Through NFT and her coaching, Jen helps women learn the different aspects of their menstrual cycle and how to use their own natural biomarkers in order to determine windows of fertile and infertile times, as well as hormonal imbalances. Jen's goal is to help women and exhausted moms who struggle with blood sugar crashes, insulin resistance, PCOS, PMS, or just need to feel better overall. She does this using a variety of different approaches to eating and tailoring it to each individual woman, their health concerns, and what works for their lifestyle and budget. In her free time, because every mom has so much free time, Jen loves heading to the gym to lift weights, and you will always find the latest health-related book on her desk, as well as a variety of podcasts downloaded onto her phone. You can find Jen Winkler on Instagram at Coach Jen Winkler or on her website at jenwinkler.me. Jen Winkler, what an absolute honor it is to welcome you back to Boundless Body Radio.
Oh, I love being back here. I remember our conversation was so fruitful. It was so fun. And I love interacting. So thanks for having me.
I have a blast. It was a very easy conversation to have. You were awesome to chat with. And this is going to be nice because this is the time of year when I'm going through and purposely like unfriending temporarily all my friends from Phoenix. I can't stand this time of year when it's just like around here in Salt Lake, like this morning is a great example. It turned 50 degrees. The sun came out. It was wonderful. Short sleeves and sandals. And now it's like snowing sideways again and really cold, temperature dropping. And like,
oh my gosh.
Oh, I'm just so jealous of you guys this time of year.
Yeah, this time of year in the morning, I'm outside like getting the sunrise and I have my robe on and it's cold. It is chilly before sunrise. But then now we were just at the park with my son and it is super warm. I could have a tank top and shorts on, but I think whatever you're getting, we're getting tomorrow because the temperature is dropping down to 59 for a high.
That's cold.
Which, I mean, I think it's cold for here. Yeah. Especially when there's no sun shining. So yeah.
Yeah.
But I definitely love living here. I won't lie.
I always have to remember it's all so relative. Like when I go down there and visit and it's January and it's like 60 degrees and I'm like you just said, like tank top and shorts and everybody from Phoenix is all like bundled up. Like I have to remember it's all relative. Like if I went to Canada, it would be a temperature swing the other way. So it's all relative.
Yeah. No, totally.
Well, that's awesome.
It is, yeah.
Well, next week we get to make...
the summer is just hard.
Yeah.
Like we pay for it in the summer.
I was going to say, we'll get you back. We'll get you back in July when it's 120 where you are. And this totally this coming weekend, at the time of this recording, we're going to make a compromise and basically meet in the middle to be in Las Vegas for the Collaborative Science Conference, I believe it's called.
Conference, yeah.
What do you think about that? Are you pretty excited? It's the first one ever.
I am so stoked. I have been a big fan of Dave Feldman. Like at least the past few years, you know, this is when I first heard of him and all, you know, just the cholesterol stuff that pops up in the space where, you know, people, I actually just got an email from somebody today who's on statins and is like, the statins aren't helping my cholesterol. Can you help me? And I'm like, hey, perfect timing. Like, you know, I'm going to this conference. Any other, I mean, I know a good amount as well as it is already, but just to hear more and to open that discussion about lean mass hyperresponders and look at the science that him and Dr. Budoff and Nick Norwitz and all the other fantastic speakers that are coming, including just basic citizens like you and me. That's what I love about it is that he's giving a platform for the unpopular people, I guess, that have science they want to share. So I am super stoked to go to be able to support him and his initiative and everything that they're doing. For sure.
So amazing. I mean, if you haven't heard of Dave Feldman, you're probably living under a rock, but like this guy came onto the scene almost a decade ago, maybe 7 or 8 years ago, came to a conference, I believe. Nobody knew who he was, but he basically stood on stage and said, I'm going to take a cholesterol measurement. And in 2 or 3 days when we're closing, my cholesterol measurement is going to be vastly different. And I'm going to explain why. And everybody's like, who is this guy? He said, like, if I'm wrong, like, I'll never come back. You'll never hear from me again. And I'll just leave. And sure enough, now we look back at all the amazing research that's been done and where that's led and to even think where this is going to go in the next 5, 10, 20 years. It's absolutely wonderful. He's done such amazing work and has no background in this kind of thing. He's an engineer designed or trained to do computer work. And it's just incredible what he's done in the field of cholesterol. What an amazing guy.
Yeah. And I think having that engineering background is a really big deal, because this day and age, a lot of medical professionals, as we know, they're just trained by the books and trained, which are created by pharma industry, et cetera. So to actually take a step back and look at how and why something happens and the mechanism and the pathway, that really takes an engineering brain where you break something down in order to put it back together. So yeah, his stuff has definitely been invaluable. And I've said, especially in Dr. Nadir Ali, especially too, I'm really excited for him. So if anybody doesn't know about this, straight off the bat, I'm sure it's like not a paid promotion, cosci.org, COSCI.org. You can check it out. If your ticket is your donation, whatever you can donate, like as low as $25 up to, I don't know what the limit is now, but it's considered a tax write-off, I guess, like the donation. So yeah, I'm super stoked. It's going to be good.
It's going to be amazing. And this is not your first conference, right? You've been to other conferences before.
Yeah, I've been to, I actually haven't been to a lot because I have a little guy, he's 7, but we went to KetoCon. We wanted to go to KetoCon a while ago, but that's when COVID started and everything was being closed. Because I started my ketogenic journey in 2018. So 2019, I actually went to a medical version of a ketogenic where it was made for doctors and nurses and practitioners. I didn't know that when I showed up. I was like, oh, this is interesting. And it was right here in Phoenix. So that's why it was an easy drive over there. Keto Mojo, like all those people were there. And then COVID happened. Everything was shut down. Then we went to KetoCon in Austin, 2022, I think. We went to Vegas Keto. I guess I have been to a number. Yeah. I went to the Vegas one as well. And then this year I won't be able to go to KetoCon, which I'm super bummed about, because I was invited to be on the panel of the low carb cruise, and they're at the same time. Cool. So I will be on low carb cruise. I'm still excited about that though. Some Dr. Ben Bickman, Dom DiAgostino, his wife, Dr. Tro, there's some really good speakers, and then I'll be on panel with them as the health coach. So
it's amazing.
I'm super excited. My first official, like,
good for you. So well deserved. That is amazing. Good for you. That's awesome. As part of what I'm doing with this conference is I'm inviting people who this is like their very first conference that they're going to, and I'm having them come on to do 10 or 15 minutes and just tell us, you know, what your journey has been, what you're looking forward to, what your expectations, you've never been to one, what do you think it's going to be like? And I just did my first one today with this dude who you'll be able to meet. His name's Les. He's been really active on the app that comes with the conference.
Yeah.
And to see his like anticipation and excitement and like, I get to meet like Dr. Barry and all these people. Like, you have no idea that Dr. Barry is going to sit there and talk to you for like 10 minutes, as long as you like. The energy buzz that you're going to get for how excited you are now. You're going to be so excited for months and months afterwards. Really cool to like see somebody who's just going to do their first.
Oh, totally. I actually have never met Dr. Barry yet. This will be my first time too. Like, he's never been at any of the ones that I've gone to. So I'm really stoked to officially meet him also.
Yeah. Well, yeah,
and Nisha. I love Nisha.
They're both amazing. Yeah. You're in for a treat. He will be followed by about 10 or 15 people wherever he goes, but he will stay and talk to every single one of them for sure. So that's awesome. Will be a treat. Yeah. It's going to be really fun. It'd be great to meet you in person. One more thing to catch up on. We both have recently turned 40 years old. Happy birthday, first of all. And how has it been to turn 40?
Thank you. Gosh, it's amazing. We celebrated by going to Florida. I have some family over there. So we spent a couple of weeks over by Fort Lauderdale area and then over by Sarasota area. So we drove across and it was so it's been probably 6-7 months since I've turned 40. I really took that time as a time of reflection and just seeing, where am I at now? Where do I want to go? Where have I been? And to see, wow, I feel younger than I ever have felt in my life. Like, you see these videos. I don't know if you follow any of the like 90s pages or anything like that on Instagram, like nostalgia kind of thing. Some of them have mentioned, like, they've shown pictures of 40-year-olds, like Alice from the Brady Bunch, and, you know, from those shows of what they looked like when they were 40. And I'm like, I don't look like that. I hope not. but like, in my eyes, I see them as much older. But yeah, just to be like, wow, I feel so much better than I've ever felt in my life. And I'm stronger. Like, I never thought, I'm not like the super buff, you know, I'm not like Dr. Gabriel Lyons or something like that, but I have more muscle than I've ever had. I feel stronger. I can play with my kids. Like, things that I never thought I could have, I have now, and I am. And it just brings me such a joy in my heart to see that I've been able to accomplish that. And now looking in the future too, to be like, well, if I've been able to get this far, what's stopping me to get any further? Like, not just health-wise, but business-wise, mindset-wise, spiritual-wise, whatever it is, like, I can make it it's as far as the imagination can take me. So yeah, that's kind of like a little summary of what, what about you? How's your year been?
Great. And just the same, like today I woke up and went and played ice hockey. I got a little walk in before it started snowing again. And like, you know, I stop at Costco and buy my groceries. And like, I'm the only one in the parking lot that's riding my grocery cart through the parking lot. Like it's a bobsled. Like I just feel so vibrant and alive. And like, I would not go back to 30, not a one chance. I would go back. It feels so much better. And I love the idea of like aging that we see in our community of like aging is acquiring more experiences. It's gaining more wisdom. And it's learning and feeling better this whole time. And a huge reason why I love following you on Instagram is you're always doing something fun, lifting weights, playing with your kids, like all these things. I can tell this huge smile on your face, like all of it's just bringing you all this joy. It's really fun it's equally fun to see this in the community and to be able to live this way. And it's also a bit of a bummer to see what the contrast is out there and how terrible it's getting. It just keeps getting worse and worse.
Yeah. And that's all I try to do with my Instagram is like, obviously it's my business platform. There's going to be some business stuff there, but it's to be able to educate and let people know, like, you can do this. And whether it be carnivore, keto, low carb, or just something like no sugar, no grains, like, you know, there's so many variants where you can take one small step to gain your health back. And you don't have to be living in misery or commiserating with other moms about how you can't wake up. And, you know, that's a new trend now where it's like, oh, I just need my glass of wine because it was such a horrible day. It's like, no, there's beauty in the day. There's joy, but you have to find it. And you have to, many times when you're unhealthy and you can't do it, it's hard to find that joy, you know? So being able to get up and thank God that I have another day to live and that I can go out and lift weights. I take care of my mom. My mom lives here. She's disabled, legally blind, and she's been suffering a lot. And I'm seeing it firsthand where her rheumatoid arthritis, she doesn't eat junk food. She eats what we eat. She eats primarily an animal-based diet with maybe some veggies or a fruit. But her rheumatoid is very active. And I know it's because her muscle mass has been depleted. She hasn't been able to build it. She hasn't been able to go out. So seeing that firsthand and taking care of her, I hope this doesn't sound in a negative way, but gives me more motivation to make sure I don't follow in that path. And I know that's what she wants for me too. Like, she doesn't want me to fall in the path that she has. So I do everything I can to be proactive. Like, okay, I'm 40. Perimenopause is going to be right around the corner. What am I doing to prepare myself for that stage? And eventually for menopause, I don't want to lose my muscle mass. I don't want my bone health to go down. I want to do everything I can to prepare and have smooth transition into the new phase of life. So yeah.
I love that. Well, thank you for being such an example in the community. It's really cool to see. And it's one of my favorite parts. I'm just going to review our agenda of things to talk about here. We already did the obligatory Phoenix joke, so that's out of the way. We talked about the conference. That's out of the way. We talked about turning 40. That's out of the way. I guess we don't really have anything to talk about. Last time you told me that you had found the carnivore diet. You were doing carnivore, which we all know is the best diet ever for everybody for the rest of their lives. So you must be thriving and kicking ass, fully carnivore. So I don't know if we have anything else we need to address.
Yeah, that's it. We're done.
That's it. It's so interesting to be part of the carnivore community. It's a diet that I love. I still practice it. I think it's amazing. I see my wife do it and try it for a while and step away from it. And the stories that you hear is you don't need fiber. You don't need vitamin C. All the nutrients you need come from meat. And yet I see people that start to maybe not feel so good if they've done carnivore a little bit too hard or too long. And it breaks my brain. It's hard enough to be in nutrition and just be wrong about everything all the time. I may as well have just been a weatherman or something. Like, it's really difficult to understand how something can be so amazing and so healing for so long and so many people can also have a shadow side where people need to step away for a little while. So We have lots to talk about, and I want to hear your journey. Yeah. Let's go back and remind the audience why you found low-carbohydrate and ketogenic and carnivore diets to begin with, because your story is super interesting. Basically, the whole reason a ketogenic diet was, you know, kind of really discovered and promoted to begin with. So let's hear a little bit about your story, and then let's get into how that evolved.
Yeah, thanks. So I'll do like a Peapod version, and if they want more detail, they can always go back to that other episode. But basically for myself, I was diagnosed with epilepsy when I was 12 and was on medication my whole life. And as I grew older, the medications continually switched to a new one because I would have breakthrough seizures. So then they'd say, okay, try a new one. Eventually I was on one that that caused a severe bout of pancreatitis, and I was hospitalized for over a week. So I don't know the effects of that. I don't know if I am still suffering from pancreas issues. Like, I don't have severe pancreatitis anymore, but there's always residual things, you know, that could result. But I did eventually get insulin resistance. I was 200 pounds, you know, and that would go back and forth depending on what medication I was on as well. But they never thought to ask, they never thought to go, well, maybe let's check her diet. They never asked what my diet was like, what my lifestyle was like, what my stress was like. I had a lot of stress. I don't think we talked much about that, but I have some history of some childhood trauma stuff that happened. None of that was ever touched upon or asked. It was just, what's the next med? Jump ahead a number of years, got married, ended up getting pregnant, which I was nervous about with epilepsy, but I have a deep faith and trust. Like, I felt called to be able to have a child. So we followed that calling. Everything ended up perfect. But through that pregnancy, I gained 80 pounds. So I was 220 pounds by the end of my pregnancy. Doctor, every time I went, was like, it's okay. It's normal. Like, it's fine. It's like, okay. So after giving birth, I was down to, I think, an even 200, like 190 something, 200. And I was really miserable. Wasn't sleeping well. I was on the highest dose of medications that I've been on in my life. So I was on Keppra, and I already forgot the second one I was on, but it was the highest dose allowable, actually above the highest dose. And I couldn't sleep, insomnia, panic attacks. I couldn't drive because of the panic attacks, not because of seizures, but because I would just freak out and start swerving. So it was really affecting. And I was like, I need to do something. I remember hearing about ketogenic and learning when I was in college, typing natural ways to heal epilepsy, and ketogenic would pop up. This was back in 2003, 2004, somewhere around there. But no one could help me. The neurologist was like, that's for children. So 2018, my son was born in 2016. 2018 is when I officially started the journey. We watched The Magic Pill on Netflix. My husband did it to support me as well. And then he saw healing with his colitis. So he has ulcerative colitis. And within 5 weeks, it was better. And he was fine and off his medications. So I went through that process. Ketogenic did wonderful. Marketing started picking up with it. So there was a lot of keto treats. And I was like, ooh, keto. Okay. I didn't really have someone guiding me. I was just trying to do it on my own. My neurologist knew when I got was supportive of it. He has done studies. That's how I found him. He's done studies with ketogenic in adults with adults with epilepsy. So he was like, yes, you're doing it right. He started weaning me off of some medications. He's like, this is too much. You don't need this much. But because of the keto treats that started coming out, sugar addiction, food addiction aspect was coming back to me, and I was gaining more weight, and I couldn't stop the keto treats. They were just so good. So then that's when carnivore was starting to get popularized. I think it was around 2020, somewhere in there. And I was like, okay, let me give this a shot. And I was nervous because my prime reason was for my epilepsy. It did help other things. It helped my PCOS, my insulin resistance. It helped me lose weight, skin cleared up. So, you know, all the stories you hear, sleep is better, stress is better, et cetera. But I wanted to make sure carnivore would work for the epilepsy part. So I thought about it and I said, well, why is keto good for epilepsy? The ketones. Just make sure I'm doing a high fat version of carnivore and I'll have ketones. So that's what I did. And I was able to conquer like the food addiction aspect. I lost some more weight, got down to my lowest weight, and I felt good. And did that for like a year and a half. So then that's when the transition happens. It was like not too long, I think, after we spoke. The one thing that started going down, and hindsight's 2020, right? So back then, again, the weight started going back up and I was losing a lot of hair and my thyroid numbers did not look great. So I was like, okay, I think what I was doing was fasting too much. Like if I look hindsight before I explain what I actually did, I think the root cause was I would intermittent fast every day. I wouldn't eat until lunch because that was a popular thing then. You wanted to skip breakfast. You wanted to fast as long as you could. Hindsight, that's not the best for women. You know, we want to align our circadian rhythm and depending where we are in our cycle. So that was happening. I started getting migraines before my period, which I used to have before, and then it came back. Again, with hormones, that's another issue. If you're fasting before your period's coming, that week before your period, fasting too much or eating in a caloric deficit consistently all the time and never bumping it back up, that can deprive progesterone, which would then cause headaches. So all those things were happening. So I thought maybe I'll try and reintroduce carbs. I worked with somebody to try and do that because I was nervous. And I did. We were able to find like a sweet spot as far as the mental game goes with carbs. But I gained even more weight. So I was really frustrated. I was back up to like 160. Originally, I was down to 142. So it was a significant amount that came back. So then this past year, so that was exactly a year ago. And this past year has been a lot of discovery, a lot of research in fertility, hormones, how they function, you know, the pathways and all that stuff. I was able to find my sweet spot where the first 2 weeks of my cycle, I'm pretty much carnivore. There might be an occasional like square block of dark chocolate. Or if I do like an intense workout, I might throw in like a small clementine or just something small, but it's always strategically placed around a workout or something of intense nature. And then the second half of my cycle is when I start pulling in some whole food carbs, one ingredient carb, whether it be an orange, an apple. Sometimes it might be a sweet potato or French fries made in the air fryer. Very small, but it's never more than like 40 to 50 grams of carbs. I don't do more than that. And that has been my sweet spot. That is, so I don't call myself like, I'm keto or I'm carnivore. I just say, this is the Jen Winkler diet. Like, this is what's working for my hormones and what's making me feel good. And that's what I want to do with my clients is just, let's figure out what works for you. Like, I've been able to lose the weight. I'm at like a pretty level spot. I could lose a little bit more, but I'm not unhappy where I'm at. I feel good. My energy's back. My hormones are back in balance. The headaches are gone. My hair has grown back. So all the signs of good hormone function have come back with me doing this flexible way.
Wow. Okay. I've got questions. This is going to be great. I love the Jen Winkler diet approach. And I think it was Dr. Peter Bruckner who brought this up at Low Carb San Diego, where he said, what's the best type of study that we can do? And everybody in the audience kind of murmured, like, it's a randomized controlled trial. And he said, no, it's an N of one where you are the N of one. Like, that is the most important thing. I can read the research. I can know the studies. I can talk to people. I can do everything and learn. But at the end of the day, I have to do what's best for me. And that's not that there's no study that's ever going to tell me that. I have to experiment and try things and understand that even things that helped me last year, last month, last week might not work for me tomorrow. And I have to be willing to flex around that. So I love that approach. I love how curious you were about that. The meals and the intermittent fasting thing I find to be very, very interesting because one of the tough things and a pattern that I see people get into, I got into it myself, it was difficult to break out of, is I was pretty much OMAD carnivore for a very, very long time because when I would eat until full satiety. So when breakfast time did roll around, well, I don't really want to eat breakfast. I feel satiated. It's inconvenient. I'm not that hungry. And so then it's very easy to get past the lunch hour, maybe feel like a light bump of hunger. And that goes away. And then it's like, great. Okay. It's dinner time. Great time to eat after I've done everything. That's a tough pattern to break. How were you able to get past that?
Yeah, that's a good question. So this is really interesting because I was naturally hungry at breakfast actually. But I was forcing myself past that because of what people were saying was a good fasting protocol. They were saying like, anytime you heard about intermittent fasting back then, it was just don't eat breakfast and extend it until 12, 1 or 2 o'clock. And I literally had to force myself. Like, I would skip workouts because I knew if I went and worked out, I felt like I was going to pass out. So, but I could naturally fast and skip dinner. I felt better with that. I was just pushing myself because of the advice and everything that was being pushed in social media and podcasts and books. So then I just started trying to be intuitive and listening to my body. I'm like, okay, I know sometimes our body lies if we're not fully balanced and in homeostasis. Like, it's not really a lie, but it's not the full truth, I guess you could say. But like for me, I felt like I could trust the intuition. I said, okay, I'm going to start eating breakfast and eating lunch and then an early dinner. Like, or sometimes it was like a lunner, I guess you could say. It was lunch and dinner mixed together. And I would fast in the evening. So I started doing that. And I think that was kind of my transition into sometimes just, okay, I'm going to have my dinner at a normal time, like in the 5:30, 6 o'clock realm. I'm still intermittent fasting. I'm still fasting from, you know, depending on where I'm in my cycle, like from 6 until 8 o'clock usually. Like this morning, I didn't eat till I think it was 10 o'clock because I went and worked out. And I'm at that part of my cycle that I can do that in a healthy way. And it feels good and can pump and lift heavy, et cetera. But yeah, I think it's just having that knowledge and understanding of what the hormones are doing, what they need, and aligning to this. Like, there's a lot of circadian rhythm talk and really focusing on that too. So for me, education is my driver, and that's what motivates me to do change. And that's why I was pushing myself the wrong direction before. So yeah.
Interesting. Okay. So these meals that you're eating, let's say it's a day that you're eating those three meals a day, are they super large meals? Like, when do you stop eating? Do you kind of follow the cues of like, you want to eat until you're very, very satiated? Or is it more like, oh, I'm going to have a more kind of moderate amount and I'm going to get mostly full, but as soon as I'm kind of not interested in food anymore, I'm going to put it away and so that I can be hungry in a few hours later?
Yeah, that's a good question. I've checked my leptin, and my leptin levels, my satiety, ghrelin, all that stuff is normal. So I know that I can trust my satiety signal. I have had clients, I'm just saying this as a precursor because I know people will hear something and they'll just follow what other people do. And I've been in those shoes. I have had clients whose leptin was very dysregulated, even though they're carnivore, like, so they could just keep eating and eating like way over calorie amount. Calories still matter. Like, we hear a lot, calories don't matter. No, they still matter depending on your energy intake, outtake, et cetera. But she, yeah, these few clients I'm thinking of, they had to track their food to know how much they're eating. Otherwise, they would have kept going. That being said, that caveat, for myself, I know that my satiety signal is proper. It's normal. It's not dysregulated. So I would eat each meal until satiety. The way that would look like is I will eat my meal. And a lot of times I still felt hungry. Like, if I'm tracking my food, I'll do it every once in a while, not every day. If I'm tracking my food and I see, okay, this is about a third of my calories for the day for breakfast, let's say. If I still feel hungry, I'm going to wait 10 minutes before I take another bite, because it takes that time to register. Your stomach needs to signal to your brain to say, hey, you're full. So I'll wait 10 minutes, because there have been times I'm like, oh, I could still eat more. And then I regret it 10 minutes later. I'm like, oh, I'm too stuffed. So that's the way I usually do it. And then, I try to go more calories morning and lunch and keep my dinner lighter. I just sleep better that way. So that's kind of my thing. Front load the calories in the morning. Dinner's kind of light.
That's very well explained. I really appreciate that. When you were talking about the morning fast, it sounded like you were more kind of like powering through breakfast. I actually just got done speaking with a fasting expert, Marisa Moon, and we were talking about like creamy coffee. She was great. It was really a fun.
She has a new book coming out.
Yeah. Not So Fast, which is all about how to fast in a way that's like not too much. And yeah, we got into the discussion a little bit about coffee. There's some fasting experts that say black coffee only or none. Marisa is a little bit more on the side of like, you can have creamy coffee. I still do the coffee every morning with the MCT and the butter. And so I know what it feels like to have that kind of like suppression of hunger for a little while. I definitely feel that as one of the benefits, and it does allow me to do a fast. I also notice a mental benefit, and I appreciate that. Were you doing any coffee or coffee with fat in the morning that helped you with the hunger suppression?
Yes, there were times I would do that. I don't do caffeine at all. I haven't done caffeine since college because it just sends me off the rails. Like, I get so jittery. But I was doing decaf for a while, and I would put MCT, a little bit of butter, and a splash of cream, probably equating to like 200 something to 300 calories usually in there. And that the MCT, it's funny you say that, because I haven't had MCT in forever, and I just started again yesterday having it in the mornings, because there's just, I don't know what's going on. There's some protocol I'm going through. That's a whole different story. Some cleansing, some detoxing, et cetera. So I think there's some brain fog hitting. So I was like, I need some MCT. But yeah, I used to do it before, and that would help sometimes. But like you said, there were fasting experts that were like, no, nothing. So I think I went to that extreme, and it was like, just to be sure, because again, going back, I want to heal my epilepsy. No one knows the cause of it. No one knows what it is. So I'm like, okay, autophagy, cell cleaning, like all these fancy words, trying to do whatever I need to do to try and heal it. If it's even possible to heal, I don't know. But yeah, so once in a while I did, but most of the time I would try to just power through.
Power through. Okay. Let's talk about the carbohydrate introduction. So there's a few things we can talk about here, but number one, I just want to say, like, how difficult was it for you, knowing that you found a ketogenic diet, found improvements on a carnivore diet, not only for weight loss, like what most people want to do, lose fat, lose weight, they have all these side things that happen as well on the same time, but you had a very, very strong reason to be on a more strict type of a ketogenic diet. That must have been, I think it's terrifying anyway for anybody for any reason, especially that weight loss thing. You create, by the nature of the thing, a bit of an orthorexia, unfortunately, of carbohydrates. We think that carbs are bad. We need to get rid of them. And if some is good, more is better. So all of them are gone on a carnivore diet. You had a medical condition where a ketogenic diet is strongly shown to help people with epilepsy. How difficult was that for you to then say, okay, I'm going to bring these back in?
Yeah, I have never thought of that, actually. I'm really glad you asked that. It was hard. It was hard. I do believe there was somewhat of an orthorexia. And I can say that because even if I saw, like, my husband or my son, not so much, sometimes I was like, yeah, but if I saw any of them eating any kind of, like, they started introducing rice into their diet, and I'm like, like, I was like freaking out, just, oh my gosh, it's rice, you know. But it over time, eventually that dissolved, and it's like, okay, their metabolism is not my metabolism. It's totally different. They can handle it. But it was hard because, so my mindset was, I'm going to be ketogenic. Well, when I say ketogenic, in ketosis, I'm going to be in ketosis the rest of my life. But then when I was searching for answers and learning more, I would hear a lot of speakers talking about ketosis isn't meant to be for life. Like, it can drain your hormones. It can do this. So I started getting a little fearful. And I actually would go to these speakers at talks, at conferences, and say, so ketogenic is good for epilepsy, right? Like, it's therapeutic. And they said, well, yeah, absolutely. I said, so what do I do in this case? Like, you say that it's going to tank your hormones. It's going to do all these negative things. What do I do? And they said, oh, your case is different. I said, but is it? Like, I get that it's different. It's for therapeutic, but I have to suffer my hormones because of my, like, I have to pick which one do I want to suffer? Which one do I want to allow for me to suffer? Epilepsy, hormones, like, it didn't make sense to me. So that was part of also what started my exploration in trying to dig deeper in, is ketosis bad long-term? We don't fully know, obviously, like, unless there's something I'm missing. I'm always willing to learn. Like, I love learning. I'm never going to say I know it. But I think for some people, I think you've even said it, you've been in ketosis like very long time, right? Like, or is it just,
I would assume, I mean, I've been eating mostly a carnivore diet for 5 years. I have not checked my blood one time. So I can't really confirm whether I have or haven't, because that's the way to know, is to check your blood. But I would assume that would be the case.
Okay. Yeah, it could be. I mean, it depends on some people. There were times that I was in carnivore. I wasn't technically in ketosis and I'd have to up the fat. But that's all like technicalities of things, you know, how do you fully measure if you're fat burning? That's a whole different rabbit hole. So yeah. So to get back to your question, there was some fear in it. And I think that's one of the things the coach kind of helped me with was, you know, helping me walk through, find the foods that won't trigger me to want more, or which foods do I not feel great on? Like, which carbs, I should say, do I not feel great on? Like, certain fruits, like, I tried a banana and I was like, no, those days were not good. Sweet potatoes, I have to be very careful with. Like, that will trigger me to want tons more. I can eat sweet potato fries till I'm blue in the face. Like, it would be. So that one I'm very, very cautious with. I have to be very mindful if I do have that. So I have found the vegetables that I'll eat that don't trigger like me wanting to go down the spiral of other ones. But yeah, it was frightful. And I still am, like, let me preface, because we're, anytime I feel like we talk about carbs, people are like, oh no, you know, that's the devil, whatever. I am very heavy animal based the whole time. Like, my breakfast almost all the time is eggs and bacon or sausage or some kind of, it's all animal based, my breakfast. Once in a great while, I might put like some sauerkraut or something, like kimchi, whatever. But the evening is where I might have like a little bit of veggie. So it's really not that much. And I do carbs from dairy also. I'll buy raw milk, I'll buy raw cheese, like stuff like that. So when I should have said this earlier when I said my sweet spot, that is part of the sweet spot I have found too, is sourcing the carbs from the dairy, from real dairy, not pasteurized, and very small amounts of vegetable. I do better with fruits like apples and oranges. So,
okay.
Yeah.
That answered my next question, is how do we know which things to bring in? And just like you said, like, try something. I'm assuming you tried one thing at a time. You probably didn't try the fries and the apple and a rice cake or whatever, yes, all the same thing. You need to kind of try those at different times. So I think that's really, yes, smart. Your hunch, let's just say you decided to add in the carbohydrates and even at a small amount, you started to have the symptoms of epilepsy come back again. Would you then say, okay, if somebody really has such a low tolerance for carbohydrates, they have to have like next to nothing or none, would you say the next best thing to do would be you have to have an incredible amount of fat to make sure your hormones are going to be okay?
I think so. Yes. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you asked that, because that was part of my issue also. I just cannot digest fat well. Like, it's super high. Like, if I'm at 80%, I get horrible heartburn, horrible, like all the reflux, all that stuff. So, and I've tried digestive enzymes and they literally made me vomit. 15 minutes after eating, the whole meal was out. And I thought it was maybe a food bug. So I tried it again in the future and it happened again. I'm like, okay. So, and I even tried a different brand and that one made me nauseous. So I didn't throw up, but I'm like, there's something, my body doesn't want more digestive enzymes. The other aspect was I did, because my doctors with Mayo Clinic, I got to do some genetic testing and they got to test me for familial hypocholesterolemia. And they tested a whole bunch of other aspects too. So I do not have the genes that the Inuit have to digest high fat. And I don't know how reliable that is. Like, as far as that genetic aspect, it's just an interesting fact, but I'm like, hey, that maybe that's part of it. I can do 65 to 70% fat pretty well. But once I get higher than that, it's indigestion and it just doesn't work well. That's part of the protocol stuff I'm working on, seeing if there's some healing, some liver detox and stuff. That's what I'm working on now. So when I said like brain fog and stuff, I'm like, yeah, there's probably stuff,
yeah,
from that. But yeah, I would encourage some other people, if they can tolerate the high fat, totally, could work.
I would say the same thing, but practically speaking, with the people I work with, to tell them to eat 170 grams of protein and try to match it with fat, practically speaking, I don't see many people who can pull that off. I think it's very, very difficult. And even the meats that we have that have a certain percentage of fat, you're losing some of the fat. You can never tell if this much fat is in something or not. There's rendering going on. I mean, there's so many factors, like your digestion issues, that like, yeah, I think we should recommend that. But practically speaking, I mean, I don't know if I could pull that off, and I eat a lot of fat. So it's tough.
Yeah, it is. It's hard. And I think that's like, again, hindsight, that's why some doctors are like, ketogenic's very hard to do. And that's why we don't prescribe it. I don't think that's a valid reason. They should at least try it. I mean, look at myself. I didn't need to be 80% fat to see the healing that's happened. And full disclosure, I am still on one medication, but it's a very low dose. It's the lowest dose I've been on. I have an appointment with my neurologist in a couple of weeks, actually, to kind of evaluate that and see where things are at. But I'm okay with it. I'm not experiencing the side effects of it. I'm sure there's probably something it's doing to my body, but it's just where I'm at in life right now. And I'm riding the waves, man. I'm riding the waves.
That's awesome. Well, I love that explanation. And also to say, like, when we're talking about carnivore, I really love carnivore and keto diets. I really love to say diets that cause ketosis or help you get into a state of ketosis. More often than not, whether you're following quote unquote the keto diet is a different question.
Right.
And to me, when I think of carnivore, I do like the definition of a hypercarnivore consumes at least 75% of their calories from animal products. And from what you're describing, that would very much fit that on most days, I would assume. I've had this explained to me probably 100 times, and I can tell you, I know not one small thing more now than I know the first time it was ever explained to me, which is women's hormones. This is so vexing for me to understand, and I try, and I never get anywhere. Can you explain? And I think you're right on this. Like, I've seen this with a lot of women. Like, you can change the timing of carbohydrates for different times of the month for different results and different things. Can you explain that a little bit? I'll make sure to rewind this like 17 times and like watch it again and again and see if it sinks in.
Yeah, maybe you can get a little more precise on your question, because I could go on forever about that topic. So is there like a little more? Yeah.
I'm sure you could. That's why we brought you on. Yeah. So I guess it's like you mentioned that like most your first half of the cycle, you can keep your carbohydrates fairly low and just have little pickings here and there. But then in the second half, it's better to cycle more in. And again, the amounts you're citing are very, very low of carbohydrates. And
yeah, they're still low.
Whole ingredient, like, you know, one ingredient things, you know what I mean? Like whole food, whatever. Mm-hmm. So I guess that kind of a pattern. Why is it then in part of your cycle, you can and should have more? You might see more benefit from more carbohydrates, where others you can get away with less.
Yeah. Okay. I'll do my best to keep it short. So day one for women's cycle is always the first day of bright red bleeding. So the first day they're bleeding, that's their day one. That begins their follicular phase. Follicular because after the bleeding's done and estrogen begins to rise, estrogen then signals FSH, LH, all those hormones. FSH is follicle stimulating hormone. So it's stimulating the follicles in the ovary to prepare to release an egg. And then signals are sent for luteinizing hormone. So the women's hormones are doing this like right before ovulation, right? So period week, I always tell women, like, follow what you're feeling, in the sense of, as long as it's a positive feeling, like, don't force yourself to fast. Some people say, oh, that's the best time to do 36-hour, 48-hour fast. For some women, not necessarily. If women are bleeding very heavy, they can become anemic, and they do need that iron repletion during that time. So they may not benefit the best. So really trust. Now, if it's telling you to go, you know, to Dairy Queen and eat some ice cream, that's a little different. but as far as fasting or feasting, follow the intuition in that time. And I always tell women protein, protein, protein. That's the big thing. So because bleeding is happening during that time, iron is very important. So we want to prioritize protein and beef during that time. As the bleeding ends and estrogen slowly begins to rise, I said FSH, LH are signaled as well. The body's preparing for possible pregnancy, right? Possible new life. So during that time, we want to not try to make PRs in the gym or fast too much, but you can extend it a little longer. You can go like 18 to 24 hour times during there. If the fertile window has officially opened up, and this is what I help women understand, you know your fertile window is opening because you start seeing one of your biomarkers, that's cervical mucus. And that's how you know your estrogen starting to rise. Estrogen causes mucus in the cervical crypts. So between the period and that time, that's a good time to do the longer ones if you do like longer fasts. Personally, I'm not a big fan of doing more than 24 hours, and I can get into that afterwards if you'd like, but that would be the opportune small window. Estrogen starts rising, ovulation's preparing, there's too many hormonal fluctuations, don't go too long. 16 hours, perfectly good. You're going to get lots of benefits from 16 hours.
I like that.
Ovulation happens, that's like the grand performance, egg is released, egg is only around for 24 hours and then it's gone. So I don't know if women know that or not, like you can get pregnant for that 24 hours. It can get open up a longer window too, other nuance. So once ovulation happens, somewhere in that window of right before ovulation, within like 2 to 3 hours after, is when the highest time of testosterone for women. So that's the gym part, is where I say, go break your PRs during that time. Use that testosterone, build your muscle, all that stuff. You can also fast a little longer during that small window after ovulation for the next like 4 to 5 days. And that one can go longer, 24-hour kind of thing. But the big one I always tell women is that week before your period, the 7 days before. So after ovulation, progesterone is making a bell curve. It's going up, and progesterone, it's progestate, so the hormone to sustain life in the womb, is going up. And now there's a small little bump of estrogen as well. So the progesterone is rising up slow. If you put too much stress on the body, it will cause depletion of progesterone. And ketosis is a stressor. It's a good stressor for most. But there are some people like myself who have residual stress from the past that I just haven't worked through yet. or maybe stress in life right now. My son does have autism. I take care of my mom. I run my own business. There's a lot of stressors. So I have to pick and choose which of these stressors can I rid of and which can I keep. If someone didn't have a stress in the world and they lived in a beautiful countryside raising their cows and whatever else, I would wonder if they would actually need to be kicked out of ketosis during that week before their period. Perhaps not. However, that's the minority. If even that, most of us have other stressors. So a woman kicking herself out of ketosis during that week takes one less stress off the body and allows that progesterone to rise and fall in a gentle curve, bell curve manner. So that's kind of how I do it. And the science that I've learned behind it of why that flexing back and forth during those time periods works the best.
So part of it is understanding the science enough to like really grasp it. And another important piece is communicating it. And you just communicated that as well as I've ever heard it communicated. That makes a lot of sense. You did an amazing job. And just to appreciate that you understand it, not only like understanding the depth of the science, but also to explain it to a dummy like me, that was hands down the best explanation I've ever gotten. Thank you very much. It was wonderful. You know, we both know Jonathan Shane, and we had him on our show, and he talked about how carbohydrates can be a really good suppressor of cortisol. Is that kind of along those same lines?
Mm-hmm. Yes, because cortisol is, again, one of those that's always demonized. We still need cortisol to live. However, high cortisol is not what we want. We want the Goldilocks level. So cortisol is being released in a high amount when we are stressed. So for some people, if they've been in ketosis too long, I'm not sure exactly the pathway, but that is, you know, what it helps to bring down the stress in that aspect of the cortisol. Yes. So carbs can help bring the cortisol down a little bit. And what's hard with some of my clients, I get a lot of people who have been carnivore, and I try like, can you do this? And they get so scared, either scared, or if they've had like history of binging or, you know, unhealthy relationship with foods, which I can totally understand. And it's not necessarily my focus, my niche per se, people who have that unhealthy addiction. I know a number of coaches, I could say, hey, go to these people. They will help you with that food addiction aspect and working through it. But yeah, it's definitely helpful. And I have had clients that they just couldn't do it and they're still struggling, and it's like, oh, but, it does. I'm kind of going in circles.
No,
going
this is
back.
Great.
Yes. It can help with cortisol.
Perfect. This is fantastic. And I love how you explained the stresses, and we tend to kind of put things in different buckets of like, I've got physical stress with my workouts and maybe my sleep isn't optimal. I've got mental stress because I'm juggling a million things. I've got emotional stress from trauma in the past, and all these different things are like, we categorize them, when really the way it's handled in the body is like, it's one bucket. And if you've got all of these things all of the time, that's not going to go very well. Something has got to give if you're trying to burn the candle on both ends, yeah, of all of these things all at once.
Yep. And now add in cold plunging to that one too.
Like, yeah,
that's another one, the EMFs, you know, the 5G towers, there's, you know, so some things we just can't control unless we move to another country or into the, you know, whatever it is. The EMFs are around us. Like, we can control a little bit in our house. We can shut off the Wi-Fi. Myself, I can't because I have my mom that lives here and she uses it at night. So it's like, you got to pick your battles. But there's those things. Cold plunging, I tried that. I was excited to try it. And it did the complete opposite for me. Like, I'm working on my resting heart rate. That's my big thing. For some reason, it's elevated and my HRV is low. That's my project that I'm trying to figure out. But when I started cold plunging, my resting heart rate typically was like 76-ish on my Fitbit. It went up to 84.
Wow.
And it was stayed there for weeks. And I was like, yeah, my body doesn't want cold plunging right now. So I stopped all cold plunging, including like I was just doing my face in the morning. I stopped it all and just worked on breath and stuff. And it's back down to baseline, which was 76. So now I'm trying to get even lower. But got back to the face plunging and now that's helping. Like all I do, just a bucket of ice water, put my face in it, relax in it, and it's incredible. My heart rate will go from today, it went from 95 down to 66.
Wow.
Just face cold plunging. So something about like the full body versus the face, like my body didn't want that. But that's another stressor that people are at because they're seeing it happen. They're seeing benefits. People do get benefits from it. I'm not negating it. Like it is a wonderful tool. Just make sure it's for you if you do it. Like, just be careful. That's what I tell people.
I love that. I've been pondering that a lot recently of like all these amazing hacks for health, and we're incorporating all of them because they're all so beneficial. And it's like, when are we starting to tip the scale with some of these things being all too much fasting, too much restriction, all of these things can add up. So I really appreciate that. And you did mention the food addiction thing. And I have, again, this is just my own experience, but like when I have fruit that has fallen from a tree in my neighborhood in the summertime, I will, you know, eat it and it will be fine, but I'll get really, really hungry. And then I'll want things that are not necessarily fruit. Does that just mean that carbohydrate is probably not the best for somebody to take in if they're having it and they're noticing that is triggering cravings, emotional issues, that kind of thing, that food is probably not good for them?
Yeah, I would, that's what I would do with most of them. Like I know some other coaches who work with food addiction and they can't do the fruits because that's exactly what happens. What you said, they'll have the fruit and then they want the candy bar and then it just keeps going downhill. And then there's people like myself where it's the sweet potato. Like this coach I was talking with, for her, she can have a sweet potato and be fine and the fruits trigger her. And for me, it's the opposite. So it's really getting to know what are your trigger foods. You have to be, I think, in a good mindset. Like I said, I'm not a food addiction coach, but what I do know is you have to be in a good mindset when you're trying the food. So make sure if I try this orange, I have to make sure there's no other way that I can go downhill. Like, do I have any other foods that I might binge on? I don't want to do that. So get your mindset in a good place. Have accountability around that you can talk to. Like if you do have a coach, maybe like, hey, I'm going to try the orange today. Okay, I'll touch base with you tomorrow and make sure like how things are going. Like, so be in touch with your coach. That's another reason a coach is really helpful for that stuff. But yeah, I would say that now if it got to the point of someone like eating green beans and being triggered, I tend to wonder because those kind of vegetables, like you need to put fat on it. I use them as a like vehicle for fat in a sense, you know, it's vegetables on their own just normally don't taste good. So if like green beans was triggering them or broccoli or something, I would tend to wonder what else is there because I don't think that's really one that would trigger other stuff.
Yeah, well explained. And then as a woman is aging and getting into perimenopause and menopause, the way I understand it is the woman is now shifting from a 28-day cycle to a 24-hour cycle. This might be the better time if somebody has weight to lose, if they want to address some of the other things like insulin resistance. Mm-hmm. Would this be a better time that they could maybe fast a little bit longer, eat more consistently throughout? Like is that a time when you could use some of those tools a little bit more when the woman's not cycling anymore?
I love this question. I love it. Okay. Yes. So the woman is no longer on their typical 28 to 30. I always say like 22 to 38 day can be a normal cycle. Anything less, anything more, there's problems. So their normal cycle during perimenopause starts going large, longer, shorter, back and forth. They're getting all the symptoms, et cetera. Or they might not get the symptoms if they're eating healthy. Sometimes that might not happen. But then menopause, like you said, 24-hour cycle. So it depends. Everything's always nuanced. If, let's say, this lady, whoever she is, she's in menopause, I would evaluate her past. How much stress has she had? Are there symptoms of cortisol dysregulation? And not just high cortisol, but flatline cortisol. I honestly, when I've run some Dutch panels on people, I've come across flatline more than high. So that means they've been stressed way too long that their adrenals aren't even outputting the cortisol anymore. They're just down. So I would want to make sure that the client's cortisol is okay, that their adrenals are functioning properly. And then they can go into those longer, faster in that time. So because they don't have to work with the ups and downs of their hormones. Their hormones are just straight across now. And the reason I say that is because when a woman is cycling, the hormones are coming from her ovaries. When a woman stops cycling, her ovaries aren't working anymore, but she still needs estrogen, progesterone, testosterone. Her adrenals output the hormones she needs. And it's not as much as a cycling woman, but it's enough that should be able to like protect the bones and keep calm and less anxiety and sleep well. However, most women, that's not what happens because of the stress in their life and everything that's happened. So I would evaluate all those things with that client first before letting them say, yeah, you can do a 36-hour fast and you can do whatever. On top of that, I would have the menopausal woman, what I say is just go with the moon cycle, because the moon cycle is on a typical 28-day cycle, and just go on and off in that way. Like maybe when it's a new moon, you might do some longer fasts. And then when it gets to half, you kind of treat that like the luteal phase, like the time before your period. So that way they're not constantly building up that stress again. And they're having that cyclical aspect still.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate all of that. I don't think I approach this as well as you do, in the sense of like the last time that I posted a picture of steak and eggs that had like a sliver of avocado that made it onto the picture, and I put it on social media, and all the carnivores were sending me messages like, oh, that's not carnivore. Like, thanks. I knew that, but thank you. Like, it's such a bummer. And so I tend to like, you know, I don't have many things that aren't carnivore, but sometimes I do. And if I post it, yeah, I know I'm going to get crap from carnivores, which sucks. And you know, whatever. So I don't always show that. And you have been open and authentic. You've rebranded. You've done different things because you've learned different ways. Why is it so important for you to be authentic?
I think that's what people want. I think that's what people need, actually, is someone to be real and show what really happens. You know, In today's society with social media and influencers, there are so many people on there that are just trying to gain the fame, gain the followers. And that's not what I'm in for. I started out very like less than 1,000 followers. It was just my family, friends, whoever, you know, I knew. And I was just sharing my journey, and it just started that way. And then it eventually started evolving. And that, you know, and then that's how I became a health coach, was I was like, oh, people were asking, how did you do this? Oh, I can do this for a job. I can help you, you know? So went through all the trainings, all the certifications, et cetera. And I continue to learn, and I thrive on this. This is like my fuel. It's just always learning more. So yeah, I think it's important, and it's what I would want. You know, I live by that principle. I do unto others as I'm doing to yourself. Like I have, as you were talking about, like hitting the unfollower for Phoenix people, I have gone through those stages of like muting certain people that just don't bring me joy. And I'm seeing too much what I perceive as not authentic. And it might actually be, but I'm going to say for me, it doesn't seem that way, or it's just not helping me grow into the better person that I need to be and that I want to be. So that's my goal, is to just be able to help people find what works for them, whether it's carnivore, low carb, keto, no grain, no sugar, like whatever it is. Let's find something that's sustainable for yourself. And you know, an example, a client that I hate client graduations because we grow so close, but I had one that just finished yesterday. It's so hard. I was like, oh, not yesterday, Tuesday, sorry. But she was probably one of the first ones that I really took this approach with, where I knew she wasn't ready to jump into keto right away, but she was having severe hypoglycemic reactive like ups and downs. And she wasn't overweight. She was maybe like 10 pounds overweight, but her body fat percentage was like 40 something percent. She was 60% even before that, but she didn't look overweight, right? So she had her foods she loves. So what I did with her and what I'm doing with more clients now that have that issue is let's put on a CGM. Let's just see what the numbers are doing, you know? And she's data driven. So that's another thing I do with clients is what drives you? Is it your why? Is it what you're scared of happening? Is it data? And she's a data oriented person. So we had the CGM on her. And when she started seeing, like, she made her homemade sourdough, like she thought that was the best thing for her. And when she would see it spike, it's like, oh, okay, that's interesting. Like, and then she would do it. And then it took time to register. Okay, this is a problem, you know? And then she started noticing when she didn't have the spikes, she also didn't have the dips that woke her up at night. So that gave her enough to be like, okay, I need to go lower carb and stuff. But it, what was even better was a keto approved food of bell peppers was spiking her blood sugar 50 points.
Wow. Wow.
And so it's like, she wouldn't have known that without the CGM. And I know there's nuanced stuff with CGMs, like, well, you're releasing insulin, so you might not see the blood sugar spike. I totally get that. But that's besides the fact, like, it's, she was able to see what was spiking and be able to get rid of it. So I really want to approach it with my clients in that sense of, let's figure what works for you. Like, that's why I call it the Jen Winkler diet. Like, if you were my client, I'd say, what's the Casey Ruff diet for you? It's mostly carnivore with maybe a little bit of avocado. And we should all be excited about that for you, that you have figured what works for you. And that's just what I want to portray online is just, if you find what works for you and it's 90% carnivore, 10%, whatever, I'm going to root you on. I'm going to say, great. Because it's sustainable for you. We want to be able to keep doing it, you know? So, and real quick, I want to throw this in there too, because if you don't mind, my husband, I said his colitis got better, and it did for a very long time until last year. In May, we have no idea what triggered it. There was a stressful event, but it, I mean, he's had stress before, but all of a sudden it came back with a vengeance. It was the worst it's ever been. And we tried everything. He went back to keto. He was still going to the bathroom 15 times a day in the middle of the night. My birthday was in September. We were in Florida. We were traveling. It was horrible for him. He tried carnivore, lasted 2 weeks. And you know, you have that intuition side. He was going to the bathroom more with carnivore, which blew my mind because you hear all these colitis and Crohn's stories with carnivore, like success stories. So we were starting to feel like getting really nervous. He was down to 122 pounds. Bones were sticking out. Like I was getting nervous.
122 pounds? Wow.
122.
Wow.
Yeah. He was small. He runs on the smaller side in general because he's had colitis so long. Like his normal before that was about 150-ish. But so that to say already, like he has muscle when he's 150. But yeah, so he was down 122, lost lots of muscle, was just tiny. So I came across, you may have seen him or heard him, Dane Johnson.
I have not.
With Crohn's Colitis Lifestyle. He actually was just on Robert Sykes' podcast. He's been on a number of different ones. So I heard a podcast with him and started following him and looking at his stuff, shared it with my husband. He's not, and you know, promoting Robert Sykes' podcast here for you, but it was a great interview on this last one because Robert asks him his opinion on carnivore for Crohn's colitis. And he shares his opinion on that, which isn't bad necessarily. But his approach was very different than what I would have ever thought to give my husband. And I'm grateful for that. And it was a lot of plants. No cruciferous stuff though, like no nuts and seeds, but it was a lot of plants. Still having leaner meats, not as much beef. Ground beef was okay, but not muscle meat. So all this stuff, I'm like, are you sure? So, but he signed on with them and he completed 12 weeks with them. And he's up to, I haven't asked his most recent, but last time I asked like a week ago, he's up to 145.
Wow.
No blood. He's down to like one to two stools a day. Like, so that to say, back to the whole bio-individuality aspects, what I would think would work for most did not work for him. Plants did not kill him. Plants helped to heal. Granted, he was on a ton of supplements as well. So that's definitely doing a lot of healing also, but it didn't make it worse for him. So I'm not, and that's been a hard part in this carnivore space is I'm not one of those people that will say, plants are trying to kill you. I'm going to say, if it works for you, great. But pay attention to the symptoms. He can't do cruciferous. He just tried doing it last week, and he's realized, no, I can't. It made it worse again. So he's finding that. Like, he's finding the Jeff Winkler diet. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow. What a wonderful way to end this phenomenal conversation. This is such a humbling space to be in and to try to help people with. I just should have stuck with like my lawn mowing business when I was like 17. Could have kept it there. This has been wonderful, Jen. Where would you like people to go to find you and connect with you and your work?
Yeah, sure. So I'm most active on Instagram, Coach Jen Winkler, Jen with one N. And I do have my website. I'm kind of revamping a little bit of it, but it's still working. So jenwinkler.me. I am on Twitter and on YouTube, just not as active on there. Twitter, I kind of just, or X, whatever you call it. I kind of like follow other people, Dave Feldman, all the people that are mostly active on there. I'll just watch their stuff. And then YouTube, I'll slowly, if you subscribe now, I'll be getting that going. My goal is by June or July to get that going.
Nice. So. Oh, that's awesome. We will link to all of that, Jen. This has been an absolute joy to chat with you again. I really love the episode we did before, and this one was just awesome as well. It's cool to know that by the time this one drops, you and I will have met in person in Las Vegas. So much looking forward to that. And just, yeah, thank you so very much for everything that you bring to the table as far as helping people understand nutrition, being very authentic and really individualizing things for people and being humble enough to understand that we don't know everything all the time. So thank you so very much for everything that you do. And thank you for being on our show today. We really appreciate you.
Totally. And thank you, Casey, for having this platform so people can hear this information and being open to other versions as well. Like, as far as not going into that dogmatic, like, avocado's bad for you, like, you know, whatever it is, like giving a place for people to listen and learn and speak their voice. So thank you.
Well, thank you. That's really meaningful coming from you. I really appreciate that. Thank you for coming on
the
show.
Yeah, for sure.
This has been amazing. And this has been another episode of Boundless Body Radio. Thank you so very much for continuing to listen to Boundless Body Radio. As 2023 has come to a close, and we're starting another new year in 2024, I always try to reflect on not only the direction that we want to go in the future, but also how much we have grown in this last year. Our podcast has now generated well over 400,000 downloads from all over the world, and it's all thanks to fantastic listeners like yourself. I hope you are as excited for the new year as we are around here. The lineup of guests that we have coming up is absolutely staggering, and we're always striving to bring you the best content from the most amazing people in health, nutrition, and wellness. Remember that you can always head on over to our website to book a complimentary 30-minute session with us at myboundlessbody.com. On our homepage, there is a Book Now button where you can select a time to speak with us about your health and fitness plan, especially for the new year. We've absolutely loved chatting with so many of you out there to bounce ideas off each other and try to come up with plans to help you achieve specific goals. And seriously, I really do mean this. Even if it's just to say hello and introduce yourself, we absolutely love connecting with our listeners in the community. Be sure to check out our YouTube channel as well if you want to watch these full interviews and also shorter interviews on more specific topics that are taken from these interviews. We've gotten really great feedback over there, and it's also a really fun way to interact with people who comment. We read and reply to every single YouTube comment we get, so be sure to subscribe to our channel and leave as many comments as you like to keep the conversation going. And of course, if you haven't already, please leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. It really is the best way to make sure that the podcast gets out to more listeners. Your 5-star ratings and reviews are the best way to support us here at Boundless Body, and to support the podcast at Boundless Body Radio really only takes a moment, and it's very meaningful to us. Cheers to 2024, and thank you again for listening to Boundless Body Radio.